across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north. And we have made it to Friday. It's June 16th, 2023. A rather chilly 46 degrees here up on the lake. It's 39, however, even further north from here, up in Bayfield, 52 in Stevens Point, 53 in Beaver Dam. Coming up on the program this morning, well, we're going to start with some breaking news. Nothing good happens overnight, in the middle of the night, especially with the Wisconsin legislature. And there have been people watching the legislature for days, weeks, and months about one particular very important issue to them. It's about child care. It's about making child care more accessible, more affordable, helping keep child care providers in business, helping child care workers, helping parents. That would help businesses throughout Wisconsin. Governor Evers proposed an idea for this, and we'll tell you what Republicans decided to do in the middle of the night, coming up in just a little bit. Then a little later, we'll talk to Kia Vakil about the week's top stories, including the arrest and arraignment of Donald Trump. And then we'll visit with a colleague of ours who, as a young woman, left Wisconsin to pursue life as an actress, a comic, a filmmaker. Then Kristen Bry came home and started creating some smart, funny videos about the news, and now she has a statewide midday talk show that's been named one of the top programs on the Milwaukee radio dial, and it's being loved statewide. We'll talk to her near the end of the show today. And our friend Mark Jacob will break down some more media coverage of the Trump arrest, arraignment, and legal woes. All along the way, you can reach us on the phone at 844-967-2789 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And if memory serves me correctly, you get a chance to win Brewers tickets. Yes, that's true. We have two tickets to give away at 6:50. And we're going to have, like I said, some serious news between now and then. So we're going to try to make this fun. Somebody's going to have some fun winning these Brewers tickets coming up about 6:50 during our history lesson and music break. So get set for that. The Up North News newsletter is out as well, and it includes another Wisconsin food product highlighted on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and some Father's Day gift ideas from things that were made in Wisconsin. For example, you could get this Brewer shirt that I'm wearing. It's a dad shirt Friday, so we've got the requisite Hawaiian shirt that I picked up at American Family Field with the Brewers logo on it. Aaron Zommers is in Madison and looking going, he's either saying that is one cool dad shirt, or he is saying that is one ugly shirt. I hope I never get old enough to wear that.
Oh, no, I love it. I would wear it today if I owned one.
Oh, okay, good, good. I was a little worried there. Yeah, it was something Mathers and I created last summer. It was that, you know, there should be Dad Shirt Friday. And since we're coming up on Father's Day, I figured it was a good time to bust it out. Along with, as I showed people earlier in the week, my early Father's Day gift from one of my daughters was a coffee mug with my spirit animal on it, Roy Kent from Ted Lasso, saying oi, because every other word he says I can't say on the radio. So again, happy Father's Day to all the dads and dads to be out there.
Yeah, happy Father's Day. I looked up a couple of scenes of Roy Kent since I haven't seen the show, but there was one in particular where he was giving advice on how to deal with a bully and talking about going into the bully's house in the middle of the night, the bully of your child, taking a rope that's soaked with red paint and beating them with it. And so yes. Then when they wake up and they see it, they confuse it with their own blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not saying that that's something I would necessarily, you know, sponsor or endorse, but so much of the Roy Kent attitude toward humanity is in there. And yet once you crack through that, you know, first you see just the rough exterior, and then you see, you know, the heart of gold, and you see that he's vulnerable and everything right. Else that you've seen plenty of other times in TV, but just, you know, how do they get there? Do they get there with good writing? And that's what this is. And frankly, Ted Lasso is a father's tale as well for Father's Day. So if you were starting it, I mean, I don't know that you could binge the whole thing this weekend, but if anybody hasn't gotten to the series finale yet, this might be a good weekend to treat yourself to do that. So, all right. The chaos at the Kreitler compound is starting to dwindle, but I'm realizing after we made another trip to Goodwill yesterday, that we really are, we've become the young couple that the moving van has just dumped everything into one big pile, and now we got to figure out where it all goes. So that's our really sexy weekend plan here, is, you know, taking what had been closet Jenga or Tetris and putting things either back in or getting rid of them for good. Some tough decisions are going to have to be made here. Like I mentioned earlier this week, at the Goodwill pile last night, the bridesmaid dress with the big 80s poofy sleeves and the bow on the butt. Yeah, that went to Goodwill. So somebody is going to pick that up this weekend, I'm sure, and be so grateful.
Yeah, that's the thing with moving, is that it really, really sucks, but it does give you the opportunity. It forces you to make those tough decisions and just get rid of some stuff you're never going to use again.
Oh, and we had so much stuff in, we have a guest room in the basement, and because we have two stairwells there, and underneath one of the stairwells, it's carpeted. And we threw all kinds of junk back there, and we're getting rid of a lot of it. And I'm realizing we have this great opportunity now with grandkids, not to stuff that area with junk, but, you know, it's freshly carpeted now under those stairs, turn it into a little fort.
That would be fun.
I think the grandkids are going to like that very much. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. But then I got to figure out what to do with all that stuff or find some other place to put it. All right. Well, as we said, there's some breaking news based on what legislative Republicans did overnight in the Joint Finance Committee about the topic of affordable daycare and whether they give a damn about it or not. Spoiler alert, you won't be surprised. We'll be back. You're up north. OJ's today because of a birthday that we'll tell you about at 6:50, also when we give away Brewers tickets. But first, a reminder, and you see it if you're watching this radio program on the Up North News YouTube page, Facebook, or Twitter, that our lineup includes Kia Vakil at 6:30, Mark Jacob at 7:30, Kristen Bry from Asgos, Wisconsin, coming up at 7:30. And a reminder that if you are watching the live video feed, you can comment anytime on that Facebook page version of it, and we'll see the comments here and maybe put them on screen for the other viewers as well. You can find us on the Up North News Facebook page, Civic Media Facebook page, and the Facebook page of Bull Falls Radio, our station in Wausau. So be looking for all of that. Sports now, the Brewers were off yesterday, and they open up a three-game series against the Pirates. The Brewers are one back of the Pirates. I better double check that, because the Pirates and Cubs were going to be playing last night. So while I look that up and tap dance, I'm just going to tell you that, you know, regardless, well, however far behind we are of the Pirates, this is our chance to get back into first place in the National League Central. And okay, there you go. Pittsburgh must have lost, because we're now only a half a game behind the Pirates, making it an even more crucial series and a chance to get out there and get the Brewers back into the win column and end this six-game losing streak. In the Fox Valley, you can catch those games on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 and 1100 AM. In Richland Center, on News from the Center 107.7 and 1450 AM. Or best of all, tune in at 6:50 this morning and you could get a chance to win Brewers tickets. It's Saturday afternoon's game is at 3:10. If you haven't won anything in a month, if you can get the tickets emailed to you, and if you can actually use them, get set to call in at 844-967-2789 coming up at 6:50 and get your chance to win tickets and actually go to tomorrow's game. Well, it was a late night for legislators. For many, not by choice, but that is what Republicans on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee decided to do, not going into session until I don't even know when, sometime after 10 o'clock last night. And, you know, the old saying, nothing good happens in the middle of the night. Well, what Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee, which writes the state budget bill for the legislature, what they did overnight blows past even my low expectations for how little they are willing to do for Wisconsin families, businesses, and the workforce. And I truly mean the middle of the night, because according to Wisconsin Public Radio, The vote on this matter came at 2:30 this morning, so not even 4 hours ago. The most basic thing legislators could have done this week was to approve or modify Governor Tony Evers' proposal to help child care centers stay open, help child care workers get better than near poverty wages, help parents with child care costs that are taking up a larger chunk than ever of total household income, and help businesses keep good workers, many of them women who have had to leave the workforce because they couldn't find or afford good child care and had to leave the workforce to make ends meet. Republicans were handed to them an easy way to do that, especially with a record $7 billion in the kitty above what was expected. And even then, even handed an easy solution to this problem, Republicans told those parents, they told those businesses, they told those child care providers, child care workers, and kids, screw you. Deal with it yourself. And when we tell you what Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said a couple of days ago, before this plan was put into motion, you will see the cherry on top of the screw you Sunday the Republicans served up in the middle of the night. So let's set this up for you. It's all about a program called Child Care Counts. Governor Tony Evers used one-time federal pandemic funds to help child care providers keep their doors open during the pandemic. He called it Child Care Counts because truly, of all the essential jobs out there during the start of the pandemic, child care for those essential workers was equally necessary. Governor Evers understood and funded a program that saved jobs all over the state economy, not just the child care jobs, but the people who could continue working because they could get affordable child care. It worked. Child care centers stayed open. Parents had options. And so Governor Evers, again, looking at a $7 billion surplus, said, let's keep this going because the problem is still there. Talk to anyone out there needing or providing child care, and they'll tell you about the crisis of accessibility and affordability. It was building well before the pandemic. At least the pandemic relief showed how you could address the problem long term. So Evers proposed $340 million to make the Child Care Counts program permanent. Do you want to know what Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee approved for it at 2:30 this morning while you slept? Zero. They zeroed it out. Oh, they said they're working on a package of bills, maybe $15 million for a revolving loan fund. A revolving loan fund? For childcare, $15 million? And it wasn't even just childcare accounts. The $340 million proposed by the governor was part of a full budget request for the Department of Children and Families. In total, Evers was seeking a $760 million boost for the Department of Children and Families. Republicans overnight slashed that to $130 million. A $130 million boost for an agency, compared to the $340 million Evers was willing to put down from a record surplus just to help parents, kids, businesses, and child care providers. And this will hurt centers. This will hurt parents. This will hurt businesses. More people are going to leave the workforce. And most importantly, for the long run, more young families will consider job offers outside of Wisconsin. More companies will have a tough time recruiting companies to Wisconsin. They're more likely to go to some place like Minnesota that just provided paid family leave. So, what was Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, truly the symbol of Republicans in Wisconsin, the state's most powerful Republican, what was he saying as he was preparing to gut this essential program for kids, parents, and businesses? Well, let me tell you how he framed it at a Wisconsin Health News luncheon a couple of days ago. He tied it to the abortion issue, and he said, it saddens him to think how many Americans would be alive in our workforce doing things to help make America great if we hadn't had easy abortion access. So in the mind of Robin Voss, Wisconsin's labor shortage wouldn't exist if every woman who got pregnant since Roe v. Wade had simply been forced to give birth, no matter what the reason. All those unwanted children, all those offspring of rapists, all those offspring of incest, all those children from very low income and vulnerable families, assuming they survived childhood and the horrors that might have come from abusive parents, parents in poverty, parents involved in drug abuse, and so on, all those children, according to Robin Voss, quote, would be in our workforce doing things to help make America great. That is the Wisconsin Republican solution to the workforce crisis. Go back in time to an era of forced birth, where government could force pregnancy and labor and its many health issues on every woman. Because as Voss went on to say at this luncheon, quote, if you get pregnant, you've made a commitment to deliver that child. Again, Robin Voss's words, if you get pregnant, you've made a commitment to deliver that child. That should be written down and sent to everybody who has ever been sexually assaulted, impregnated against their will, that Robin Voss endorses that and puts the burden on you. Now, maybe you weren't expecting the abortion issue to get wrapped up in a legislative committee deciding in the middle of the night to slash to zero the amount of help to make childcare more available and affordable. But that's what Republicans did. Their desire to control women's bodies also means they get to tell more women to stay home. They don't tell them that directly, though they often talk about what a better time it was in history when one parent stayed home. Well, nowadays, they just do whatever they want when it comes to forcing that upon parents. To date, the Child Care Counts program has delivered some $380 million to more than 4,300 child care providers. It's helped ensure that 22,000 child care professionals remain employed or become employed and enable providers to continue to provide quality care to 113,000 kids. According to data that was provided by Governor Evers' office through the Department of Children and Families, there are approximately 560 Child Care Counts providers in communities represented by Republican members of the Joint Finance Committee. Again, that's just the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee. Of those people, 12 of them, there are in their districts 563 providers relying on Child Care Counts, and they represent about 80% of the child care providers in their district. And they just told those child care providers where to go. 54% of Wisconsinites today live in a child care desert, where there are few or no high quality options for child care in their neighborhood or community. And even if there's one nearby, it might not be affordable. The Annie Casey Foundation's annual Kids Count report says the average yearly cost of center-based child care in Wisconsin, $12,415. Imagine you're in a low-income job and you have to shell out $12,000 of that off the top in order to work, which is what Republicans keep saying they want everybody to do, every single mom, no matter who. According to a survey of nearly 1,200 Wisconsin early care and education providers, more than 27% of providers said their program would have closed without these stabilization grants, and that when the grants end, and that could happen, you know, within the next year as that federal money runs out, more than 60% of child care directors say they will have to raise tuition on struggling families. 33% say they will have to cut wages for their workers or be unable to sustain wages and salary hikes for their staff. And by the way, these child care workers, they're not getting rich off of this. The average child care worker makes $12.66 an hour. Oh, and one more thing. Some Republicans were getting behind a proposal to finally end the block on expanding Medicaid, known as Badger Care in Wisconsin. but not for everyone, just for new moms, so that they could have stable, affordable healthcare coverage for themselves until their baby turned one. But last night, at 2 o'clock in the morning, Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee killed that idea too. We're going to take a break and make the shift to national headlines from the week with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. Again, you can cover what we do at upnorthnewswi.com or upnorthnewswi on social media. We'll be back here up north. Headlines, things that you might have missed in the news with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. Kia, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Well, of course, we're going to start with the big story of the week, and that's former President Trump being arraigned in Miami. And, you know, now as we look back at it happening, and there's going to be probably a lot of space now before things really ramp up again, but it did meet the moment in that, you know, history was made with a former president facing dozens and dozens of charges. And I think if there's any headline from the week, it's that as people got into the specifics of the indictment, it looks really bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great that a former president took, you know, secret classified military and nuclear documents about the U.S. and its allies and stored them next to a toilet. Or a ballroom that is open to who knows how many people at his resort where people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for access. So that's not great. It's pretty, I read the indictment last week. It is quite damning. You see the quote unquote, you know, sensible Republicans, the few that still exist in, you know, the halls of Congress and around the country, pretty much saying that it's extremely bad. Even William Barr, Trump's former attorney general, you know, basically acknowledge that he's in trouble. Yeah, it's a pretty bad indictment. And yet, you know, despite all that, you've seen a lot of Republicans still kind of serve as Trump's attack dogs or try to, you know, say this is all just the Biden administration persecuting its political opponents, which is ironic for someone who rose to power chanting lock her up. But
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Republican Party under Trump.
Well, and not only are they defending him and going on the attack, but it even appears they might be willing to, you know, grind things to a halt in terms of, you know, nominations and just other business that's going on and really turning an apparent crime into more of a partisan battle. And the number of Republicans who are starting to turn their backs on Trump, still small, but it is growing bit by bit. And I can't imagine it's going to get any better for the former president.
Well, here's the thing. You're absolutely correct that Republican politicians, especially in the Senate, are, you know, creating more distance between themselves and Trump. And, you know, a couple of his fellow Republican primary candidates, Asa Hutchinson from Arkansas, Chris Christie, to a much smaller extent, Nikki Haley, have, you know, openly criticized him. But Republican voters are rallying behind him. You know, in the few polls that have come out since the indictment, he has gained support. Most Republican primary voters seem completely unbothered by this. They think it's not a serious issue that he hoarded nuclear secrets. And that really just speaks to his staying power in this among that base. You know, the counter side of that is that among the rest of the voting population, they overwhelmingly agree. According to a CBS News YouGov poll, 80% of them think it's a serious issue that Trump had nuclear and military documents without having declassified them. So, yeah, therein lies the sort of the contrast between Republican elected officials and you know, their own voters who are really what's steering them to the right.
And of all the coverage that I saw, I really want to tip my cap to one of our own Courier Newsroom colleagues who snapped a photo of a Puerto Rican gentleman standing outside the courthouse. And he's holding up a single paper towel and written on it, he put, "Here, Trump, Back to You, October 4th, 2017, Puerto Rico, which is really just kind of a reminder of when Trump went to Puerto Rico after a terrible hurricane and threw paper towels into a crowd. And that was about it. Got back on his plane and left, and made the recovery much more extensive and prolonged than it should have been. And, you know, but paper towels back to Trump, not a bad bit of symbolism at all by that gentleman.
No, and that's a really good, you know, reminder that no matter what, Trump is trying to turn this into a story of, you know, a political story, a partisan witch hunt, all this stuff. What it really is about him abusing the law and, you know, acting above the law. And he did that when he was president. He did that for decades before he was president. The amount of times he's been sued, I don't even know the number. He's done it since he's been president. And as that gentleman pointed out, when he was president, he didn't just, you know, abuse the law. He also kind of ignored it in certain ways. He did not really serve as a leader for all people in this country and in Puerto Rico, you know, which it's just a reminder that, you know, in addition to this indictment, he also served as president for 4 years and did a terrible job. I think anyone who is not a dedicated Trump voter would agree with that.
New economic numbers came out back on Wednesday, and again, they look particularly good for the Biden administration. Inflation easing for the 11th straight month. Gas and energy prices were dropping, and the Federal Reserve left interest rates unchanged on Wednesday, skipping a rate increase after raising rates for 10 times in a row. And again, it's, you can't read too much into any given month, but that does contain some news that certainly the Biden administration would welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, inflation has been a huge issue, not just in the U.S., but across the world since the pandemic and, you know, the Russian war on Ukraine. And, you know, we're seeing it in all of the European countries. It's not just an American problem. Despite what Republicans say, it has very little to do with the Biden administration's agenda, and a lot more to do with, you know, supply chain issues, to some extent, corporations jacking up their profit margins. But now we're seeing that, you know, the worst of it has passed. Prices have stabilized. You know, they're still higher, obviously, than they were 2 years ago. And that remains to be seen how much they ultimately fall. But, you know, you're not seeing egg cartons go for, you know, $11 anymore. You're not seeing, you know, $5 gas nationwide, other than where I live in California, which is just the norm, unfortunately. But, yes, you know, the Federal Reserve is, like you said, pausing interest rate increases, which they have some effect on inflation, but it is a blunt tool. So pausing it is a good thing, because the higher they go, the more they affect workers and increases the odds of higher unemployment. And so they've raised it, and the economy and, you know, job growth has held, which is a fantastic thing. But, you know, the higher rate they raise it, the riskier it is. So if we, you know, it seems to be that we are on track for, you know, what is considered a soft landing, quote unquote, which means we've gotten past inflation without causing a recession. And that's a good thing.
And all because of some very deft handling of the economy, very gentle. And you don't want anything to upend it. Oh, wait a minute. Here come some House Republicans, perhaps threatening a government shutdown as part of infighting over House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. This is an all Republican fight that could once again, like we had to say, you know, over the past couple of months, throw a wrench into the economy for absolutely no good reason.
Yeah. So, you know, McCarthy and the White House and the Senate passed this bill a couple weeks ago, you know, raising the debt ceiling, suspending the debt ceiling. But that deal really pissed off the most extreme conservative members of the House. And so what they have done is basically they ground the House to a halt for the better part of a week, starting last week and going into the early parts of this week, to protest that bill, basically. And, you know, make clear that they were angry. And why this matters moving forward is, you know, in the fall, there's going to be a government spending bill that's agreed upon. And so they are basically threatening McCarthy that bill needs to cut spending dramatically, not just from this year's budget, but from last year's, which was substantially lower. So that is going to be a non-starter for the White House and Democrats. So what you're seeing essentially is, to prevent, you know, potentially a vote on a speakership, McCarthy is telling them, yeah, we'll cut spending more. That's not going to be possible. So that raises the odds, not to the extent that they want to cut it. So that increases the odds of a shutdown, which could have, you know, pretty significant effects on federal workers and a lot of Americans who rely on the government.
It just seems to be people trying for addition by subtraction, and it does not work that way. Let's turn to a topic we don't get into very much, but when it comes to protecting, you know, consumers and jobs and family farms and all kinds of things, one of the things that some folks like to remind us about is antitrust, anti-monopoly concerns. And, you know, we've talked about it in the technology sector especially. And now there are some concerns about what Microsoft is proposing to do with another company. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this story has been, you know, one that's been going on for about a year and a half. Microsoft is trying to buy, you know, this video game company called Activision Blizzard, which makes, you know, games like Call of Duty, Overwatch, World of Warcraft, Candy Crush, you know, hugely popular video games and phone games. And Microsoft is trying to buy them. They have, you know, a deal agreed upon for $69 billion. But the Biden administration, you know, specifically the Federal Trade Commission, is trying to block that because there are concerns that Microsoft, which owns Xbox, which is a gaming console, and, you know, the mobile gaming studio Microsoft has, could give Xbox exclusive access to those games, you know, leaving anyone with a PlayStation or a Nintendo unable to play them. And that, you know, is not great. It reduces competition. It could lead to higher prices for those games. It could force people who want to play them to buy an Xbox or subscribe to the, you know, Microsoft gaming situation. And so, you know, a judge yesterday, or on Tuesday, I should say, granted, you know, the request to block the acquisition temporarily while, you know, there's a hearing later this month, and then potentially that could affect the long-term, you know, status of the purchase. So, but this is just another example of the Biden administration really trying to crack down on monopolies and mergers and acquisitions that threaten competition and consumers.
It really is an important issue, and the Biden administration would do well to stay aggressive on this, because we assume that, well, just because it's not Standard Oil, but no, these big tech companies can get very big and have that kind of monopoly control, as we've learned from past experience. And finally, in terms of labor news, I learned this week that of the thousands upon thousands of Teamsters who work in those brown trucks for UPS, I certainly thought there would at least be air conditioning in the trucks. There's not. And if that isn't a commercial for why you want to have union representation, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot imagine driving in a, you know, giant vehicle in the dead of summer, somewhere like Arizona or Texas or anywhere really in this country, you know, without air conditioning. And that has just been the norm for hundreds of thousands of UPS drivers is pretty, you know, atrocious. And that they've secured that in their, you know, negotiations is huge. That it took this long is pretty embarrassing and an indictment of, you know, modern American economics and capitalism. But like you said, it's an example of why unions matter. Workers should have air conditioning. Workers should be paid a fair wage. Workers should have fair and reasonable schedules. And that's what the Teamsters are fighting for. And, you know, we'll see if they finalize a deal or if they have to go on strike this year. And, you know, if they do, that would have huge impacts. But again, all it would take is an extremely profitable company to, you know, treat them fairly to avoid that.
Especially when you consider it gets over 120 degrees in the cargo holds of those trucks. But apparently, UPS has agreed to gradually put AC in some 95,000 delivery vans. And yes, it is about time. Newsroom, Courier Newsroom, national correspondent Kia Vakil. You can read the things he writes for us on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Kia, thanks very much. Have a great day.
You bet. Thank you, Pat.
All right, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to give away Brewers tickets. Two tickets for tomorrow afternoon's game against Pittsburgh. We'll also have your daily history lesson, a little music break. And then in our next hour, we will be talking about an hour from now to our friend Kristen Bry from As Goes Wisconsin, the 10 to noon show on many of these Civic Media Radio Network stations. We also have Mark Jacob coming up at 7:30. So a busy hour just ahead, but we'll take a break for music next. You're up north. I could listen to the OJs all day. And so far you have. We'll find some other music to play as well, but we've been playing the OJs because Edward LeVert is 81 years old today, the lead singer of the OJs. You've already heard him on Backstabbers and Love Train. You'll hear him a little later on For the Love of Money. There was I Love Music. So again, happy 81st birthday to Edward LeVert. Hey, get those dialing fingers ready. I'm going to be giving away two Brewers tickets right after we finish up our little history and music segment, 844-967-2789. We'll let you know what you got to do to dial in and win coming up in just a sec. But getting back to our little history notes, on this day in 1969, Aaron tells me that the avant-garde group Captain Beefheart and His Magic Band released their third studio album, Trout Mask Replica. Depending on your ear, it's either an absolute masterpiece or unlistenable garbage. Aaron now has queued up the first track called Frownland.
My smile is stuck. I cannot go back to your Frownland.
Quick question, please, for Mr. Somers. Can you imagine what it must look like for the one person out there whose eyes got wide and their ears popped up when they're like, oh my God, it's Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band.
Yeah, I want to meet this person.
How it made the historical notes of music in the United States, we'll never know, but there it is. All right, Tupac Shakur was born this day in 1971. Lassane Parrish Crooks was his birth name. He, of course, was murdered in 1996. Golfer Phil Mickelson. Oh, wait, from Tupac, I forgot. We've got California Love queued up. I can play a little of that. There we go. All right, I don't know how to tell you this, but this is also the anniversary, eighth anniversary now, 2015, when Donald Trump went for a ride down an escalator and announced that he was going to run for president. And in much of the early polling, he polled at about 1% to 3%. And everybody said there was no way this was going to happen. And all I can say is forgive us, Lord, for whatever we did to deserve that. It was on this day in 1972 that David Bowie released his fifth studio album, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and Spiders from Mars. Considered one of the greatest albums of all time, Suffragette City was one of many tracks on there that folks remember. On this day in 1978, I know we mentioned a few days ago the Broadway debut of the musical Grease, but it was on this day in 1978 that the film adaptation with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John opened in theaters, remains a classic to this day. On this day in 1979, the number one album was Donna Summer's seventh studio album, Bad Girls. On this day in 1980, the Blues Brothers movie premiered in Chicago and gave a big boost to stars like Aretha Franklin, James Brown, and Ray Charles. We'll play a little bit of that soundtrack coming up in the next hour as well. The number one song this day in 1990 was from Roxette. I think it was Pretty Woman that this featured at the start of the movie. I could be wrong. On this day in 2010, Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax all played in the same concert, marking the first time that the big four of thrash metal played together. Aaron writes, it's surprising that it took that long. And I would have completely been the old guy. I mean, even back then, I would have been the old guy going, wait, is that the same song they just played?
Oh, oh
I'm not known for my, you know, for my thrash metal, you know, discerning ear, shall I say.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I know. Hey, you know, it's not, I can tell the difference between various OJ songs and, you know, other people might disagree. All right. So we've got one more little musical ditty to play for you. And this is the one that maybe lets you get Brewers tickets. Now, we typically have done Wisconsin trivia or Brewers trivia, but we want to get people fired up for taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates this weekend for leadership in the National League Central Division. And so we did a little Pittsburgh trivia yesterday, and today we're going to talk about a Pittsburgh native. And we just want to know, what's the name of the theme song? You might have to sing it for us. If you know what the theme song is, give us a call at 844-967-2789. Let's give a little listen, shall we? And of course, well, that plays, I will tell you that the Pittsburgh native is, of course, Fred Rogers, also known as Mr. Rogers.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
It's a neighbor. So again, what's the name of the song? First correct answer at 844-967-2789 wins two tickets to tomorrow afternoon's Brewers game.
Always wanted to live in the neighborhood with you, so let's make the most of this beautiful day.
Don't you feel calmer
since
already?
Together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor?
I feel better.
Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor?
So there we go. We're just going to try to get it done right. Give somebody some tickets after a very nice little musical serenade for our segment here. And apparently it is Tom from Blue Mound who was on the line first to tell us. Hey, Tom, good morning. Thanks for being here.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day in the neighborhood. I don't really know the words.
Oh, that works. That's an acceptable answer. We would have accepted that. The first line or the last line, won't you be my neighbor? Either one works, Tom. I hope you're free tomorrow afternoon and can take in a little Brewers game.
Oh, yeah, can't wait. Thank you so much. Well, appreciate it.
Hey, you bet. You hang on the line so that Aaron can get your information, and we will get you some tickets to there. Thanks so much. Have a really good day. Yeah, we're going to make it that easy most of the time when we get Brewers tickets, and we want to make sure that you get to go. Aaron and I have used up these seats previously. They are excellent seats, and there's always some good baseball action. Even now, even with this six-game losing streak, again, a bad day of baseball is, still better than a good day without baseball. So an American Family Field, just an excellent place to go and do that. Well, I'm really looking forward to the next hour here. It's been a big week in the news. We're going to spend the first part of the hour, again, talking about the things that state legislators, the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee, what thing they did in the middle of the night that, frankly, falls in the avenue of cartoon villainy for just how low they're willing to sink. And then we're going to talk to Mark Jacob about the big news story of the week. That, of course, would be the Trump arrest and indictment and how the media covered all of this. And then finally, we'll wrap up the show with a visit with Kristen Breyer, a colleague from Civic Media Group, all about her story from going to Wisconsin out to the coasts, coming back again, embracing social media and the short videos that have now led her to having this really great midday radio show. All that in our next hour. You're up north.